Malachim Beis Parakas. So now we're going to do a rewind. We're going to go back to this took place during the 7 years, before the 7 years of famine begun. And so we're going back to Elisha. If you remember, Elisha, all the way back then, he brought back to life the son of this woman that we're now going to be discussing. So Pasuk Aleph begins. Elisha dibra Elisha sherechias banal. Elisha spoke to the woman, which he brought her sons back to life. Lemor, he tells her, Kumi ulechi at uveisech v'guri basher taguri kikara Hashem l'ra v'gambo la'aretz sheva shanim. So he's basically giving her a warning, and he's telling her, you have to leave Eretz Yisrael and go live outside of Eretz Yisrael, because this famine is gonna begin, and it's gonna go on for 7 years. Now, we've discussed in the past, why is it that Elisha did not cancel the Rav? Why didn't he cancel the famine? He obviously had the power, he had the ability. Why didn't he? Right? We saw that the king was upset with him over the fact that he didn't cancel the famine. Why didn't he? Right? He even sent someone to kill him. So why didn't he? So that's why we're referring back to the episode of Elisha bringing this woman's son back to life. And we're saying that's the reason he could not cancel the 7 years of famine. Why? Because there's three maftechos, three keys that Hashem holds on to. What are they? Maftech of tchias amesim, bringing the dead back to life. Maftech of parnasa, right, of geshem. And Elisha was now holding on to the maftech of tchias amesim. He brought the son of this woman back to life. Because he was holding on to that, to
he
that
had maftech. No more power.
No. So because of that, it wasn't fit for the Talmud to hold on to more keys than the Rav, so to speak. It wasn't proper for Elisha to hold on to two keys, and Hashem was only going to be holding on to one key. So since Elisha was holding on to the key of Tchias HaMesim, of bringing the dead back to life, it wasn't proper for him to hold also the third key of Parnassah, of bringing forth rain. That's why he didn't have the ability to stop the famine. Exactly. So it's because he brought the son back to life, that's why he could not stop the famine.
That's it. Just one thing. He said there were three things.
Three maftechos, yeah, three keys.
So there was a second one also?
There was a maftech of Parnasa, which is rain.
That's the second one, right?
Right, yeah.
So that's it. He couldn't do the third one already.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So now Pasuk Beis continues. So she gets up and she does what the Navi tells her. Sure enough, she moves to Eretz Plishtim, which is outside of Eretz Israel. Now typically she wouldn't want to leave Eretz Israel, because she didn't want to get punished like Elimelech got punished. Elimelech did the same thing. When there was Rav in Eretz Israel, what did he do? He got up and he left. What happened to him?
So he died.
Exactly, he died. And two of his sons died. So this woman knew exactly what happened to Elisha. She didn't want the same thing to happen to her.
Yeah.
Right? But what could he do? The Navi told her to do something. You do what the Navi tells you. Right? And now wasn't just any woman. She was an Isha Hashuva. She had a stature. Therefore, she didn't want to do this, but since the Navi said that she should do it, she went ahead. At the end of the 7 years of famine, the woman comes back from Eretz Plishtim. So she goes over to the king, and she brings this claim. She wants to bring the claim that someone took hold of her property, of her house, of her field. She's coming to the king for justice. She says she wants the king to help her take possession of her property once more. So meanwhile, what's happening? This is all orchestrated, right, by Hashem. Meanwhile, what's happening? V'amelech medaber al Gehazi, nar isha lekim lemor. The king is speaking to Gehazi, who is the right-hand man of Elisha, and he's telling Gehazi, Sapron Eli is called G'dolos asher osa Elisha. Please tell me all the great stories that Elisha did. Now, he knew, he was obviously familiar with some of them. He knew part of what Elisha did, but over here it says, Eskol, tell me everything. Tell me everything I don't know. I want to know all the stories. Tell me it all. Tell it all to me. So as this is happening, right? So meanwhile, Gehazi is telling the king the story of this woman and how Elisha brought her son back to life. And as that's happening, who walks in? This woman. What a coincidence. Quote unquote. As he's telling the king the story of Elisha bringing back the dead, as she's coming in, Gehazi is telling over the story. Not only does he have the story, but he's got the props to go with it. He says, here's the woman that I'm talking about, she's standing right over here in front of you. And so he can bring the story into life much more. So first of all, Elisha gained because he got Elisha and Gehazi gained because they got proof to their story, and this woman also gained because she's already in good standing in front of the king, because she knows, the king now knows that Elisha performed a miracle for his son. So she's in a great situation. Pasuk Vav, Beishal Amalech Leisha v'Tesaproloi. So she tells, the king asks her why she's there. She tells him, well, she left her at Israel, and she came back, and now she wants her property again. So the king sends one of his appointees, to go in and make sure that everything she owned will return back to her.
Well, it could have been too much. There was a famine.
Right. No, but I'm saying it's still a property. Right now, she's coming back now after the famine, when everything is flourishing.
But what did she lose when there was a famine in the land?
Right. Well, she was just the field.
It
was
property,
a house.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a house and a field.
Couldn't be much.
Yeah.
To eat.
No. Right. Yeah. It wasn't necessarily plenty of fruit. Right. But it was
How
just a house and a field. Right, yeah. It wasn't necessarily much. Now, the interesting thing is that the king doesn't ask any questions. He says, oh, really, that's your field? Okay, I'll take your word for it. Go ahead, here's one of my men, he'll take care of it for you. What about justice? How do you know it's really yours? Maybe
proof.
She's lying.
Proof.
Right, proof. Exactly, bring proof. Bring some kind of
lawyer.
Right, exactly. Bring a lawyer, bring some kind of title, a contract, something, right? But nothing. He doesn't ask for a thing. He says, yeah, don't worry, I'll take care of you. You got it. So, first of all, another problem is that the person who's sitting in the property, he's got the Shnei Chazak on his end. Because the halacha is, anytime someone dwells on a property for 3 years or more, that's enough of proof that he, in fact, owns the field. Because if he didn't own the field, then the owner would come along and say, hey, what's going on? What are you doing on my field? The fact that he was there for 3 years, and he can actually bring witnesses that he was there for 3 years, and no one said boo, that proves that he's, in fact, the owner of the field. Why? The halacha is that a person does not hold on to the title for more than 3 years. And so, for the first 3 years, they'll hold on to the title, because you want to make sure that no one's going to come and question your ownership. But after 3 years, they'll say to themselves, listen, I've been here for 3 years, I've got witnesses, my neighbors saw me every day go into the house, live here for the past 3 years. I don't need to keep the records of my ownership, of my deed or title. I could get rid of it. That's what the Gemara says. And therefore, once a person can bring actual witnesses that he was there for 3 years or more, that's considered good enough proof. So now, the person who's sitting in the field of this woman, he's got...
Possession. All
right. What? Exactly. He's got possession, right? He's got proof that he's been there for 3 years. So now the burden of proof is on who?
You've
it's on the woman.
Objection, yeah.
Right? She's the one who's saying, oh, yeah, you've been there for 7 years, but it really belongs to me.
It belongs to me.
Like, hello, why did you wake up 7 years later? Where have you been? But, sure, funny, interestingly enough, the king doesn't ask for that. He doesn't question anything. He's like, yeah, it's fine. So the Malbim Aver explains, he says that this was a special time. This time was a time of some kind of emergency, right? It wasn't regular times. Because there was war with the Plishtim. The Plishtim were at war with the Jews. So the fact that there was war is during that time, it's not good enough proof that you lived on or you settled a certain field. Because since there's war, right, there's a lot of unsettlement. People are constantly moving from place to place. So the fact that you held on for the field during those years doesn't necessarily prove anything. Because maybe the owner was had to flee because of the enemy or whatever reason. So that's why these years that the owner of the house sat there is not good enough proof. And that's why the king told his men to return this home and field to this woman. That's first of all. Second of all, he already knows that this woman is in good standing. Because he's aware of the fact that Elisha did a nes by bringing her son back to life. But since he brought her son back to life, that is good enough proof that this woman is righteous and trustworthy. And that's why he returns the field to her. So let's continue. So that's why she returned the field, the house, but he didn't pay for rent for the years that he was staying there. He only gave her back what she owned. Now, just a side point, the Radak points out that it says in the Pasuk that the king appointed a saris. What's a saris? Saris is someone who's... What? Someone who's castrated, right, is a saris. So the Radak points out that this was usher. The kings were not allowed to castrate any of their men. Mm-hmm. It was usher. But the only reason the king had possession of a man who was castrated was because either he bought him from the non-Jewish kings, and they still did this, or it could also be because he had some kind of illness, and that's why he got castrated. But typically, what they would do with these men was they would appoint them over the king's harems, but they didn't want to appoint, call him a real man, because then he would take care.
Monkey
would,
business.
Exactly. Yeah. Right? So what they would do, what the kings would traditionally do, they would appoint men that were castrated, and then they had nothing to worry about. They weren't worried that these men would have their way with the women in the harem.
This be like a tum-tum? Or...
No. Tum-tum is someone who's born without anything. An androgynous is someone who's born with both the plumbing of a man and the plumbing of a woman.
This is one who had...
No, he was a regular man. He was born a regular man, but somehow he got castrated, it was removed surgically,
injury or
illness, whatever it was. Yeah. Okay. Pasuk Zayin. The Yahweh Elisha Demesek. Elisha returns to Demesek. Ben Adad Melech Aram Choyle. So Ben Adad, the king of Aram, is sick. And he got the message that Melech Aram got the message that Elisha is coming. Elisha's coming. There's a perfect opportunity. Let's take advantage. So the king of Aram turns to his right-hand man, Chazoel. He tells him, "Kach biyatchem mincha, bring a gift to the Navi." V'leichet likras yish alakim, v'derash es Hashem ma'isay le'emar, ha'echiyeh mechol yizeh. Comes over to him and he asks him, he tells Chazoel to ask the Navi, "Please find out if I'm going to live from this illness, or am I going to die?"
What has this got to do with the women? The story with the woman that gets the stuff back. I mean, so what's he bringing?
Right.
He brings it about the woman. All of a sudden, he starts talking about something else.
Yeah, this is... I'm sorry, I forgot to mention a good point. This is back to the present time where we're holding now. This short story...
Oh, it's something back to now.
We're back to now, yeah.
This short story was inserted... told the woman, yeah. Okay, your
that was
stuff,
gone.
That's before.
That was before. Yeah, that was
now
way before.
Now we're going back.
Now we're going back to where we're holding right
it's
now.
It's just like in the movies.
Right, yeah. Scene one, right? Now, 7 years later, right? And right. Present
okay.
day. Right? Now we're holding back to present day. I'm sorry I forgot to mention that. So first of all, why did Elisha come to Damascus in the first place? What was he doing there? So there are really a few reasons. First of all, he came to anoint Hazael. We're going to see in a few psukim that he appointed Hazael to be the next king. Reason why Hazael had to be the next king was because he was actually going to punish the Jewish people for all the avodah zarah they did over the years, and he was going to kill them. We're going to see this in a few psukim. That was one reason. Second reason he came was because he wanted to get Gehazi back. Gehazi, after he got Saras, apparently went up the Derech. And he went to Naaman. He went to Naaman because he wanted to say, hey, look, you know, I'm the one who got your tzaras. And so I don't know exactly what he wanted from him, but he was going to hang out with Naaman. And Elisha came to bring it back. He wanted to be Chazer B'Tshuva. He wanted Gehazi to be Chazer B'Tshuva. And what happened was that when Elisha came to be machzer Gehazi b'tshuva, he tried to convince him, but Gehazi said, no, not interested. Go on your merry way, you're wasting your breath. That's when Elisha turns to Gehazi and he says, "Kol achoytu machti sarabim, ein mespikim b'yad olas b'tshuva." Anyone who sins and causes other people to sin,
doesn't get forgiven.
Exactly, doesn't get forgiven. So Elisha said, I knew that I had to try, but I knew that you're not going to want to do tshuva, because you're choyte and you were machti. First of all, he was choyte, but where was he machti? Where did he cause other people to do chatoim? So, a few pshatim, the Radak brings down. Either he put up this rock, some kind of stone, and he had it hovering over the earth, and that was some kind of avodah zarah. In another pshat is that he actually made her say, he made this rock announce, "Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am your God." So he basically set up this idol, this rock that was hovering over the earth, to appear and to cause people to think that it was a real deity.
Here he says one of them, he made the calves fly by means of a magnet.
Mm-hmm. A magnet, really?
That's what it says here.
Interesting.
So it was natural that they was no miracle or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But he was trying to show that he can do this here. So that, and I'm telling you to do this, you can do it because see what I did.
Right.
But he's magnet. Well. That means that he did it naturally. Somehow he knew how to do it.
Mm.
It wasn't nothing. Wasn't koyach from he had powers from Hashem to do those things.
So right.
That seems is what he's saying.
Right.
That's one of them. And then he said, like we did the other ones. And then the last one, he says, he stopped the students from learning. To go to an academy and learn. He stopped them from doing that. So that was three things he did.
Mm.
And then he said, I can't repeat. I'm gone.
Right. Exactly. And that's why he didn't want to do tshuva. But he made a mistake, because anyone could do tshuva.
Yeah, but what is... All right, that's what he said. It seems to me he didn't want to do tshuva. He giving him an excuse why I can't do, but what happens, Taka, in a place where a person done something like that, and later he really has charata.
Right.
Isn't there something he can do for himself?
Of course there is. There's always a place to do tshuva.
So he could have done that too, but
he
gave him an excuse. He didn't want to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the Gemara says that even Menashe, right, who was the king, the king himself was worshipping idols, one of the worst kings that Jewish people ever had. Hashem comes over to Menashe and he tells him, do tshuva right now. I'm giving you a golden opportunity. Do tshuva right now. And then, me, you, and David HaMelech are going to have a good idea, right? I told you
who's
that?
Who's going first?
Right, exactly.
I don't go first. I don't go with you guys.
Exactly.
You told us that.
Yeah. Right, so we see that Hashem even came over to Menashe, the worst king ever. Right, he was for sure choyta and machti, but still, he still had an opportunity to do tshuva. It says the malachim wanted to stop him from doing tshuva, but Hashem, it says Hashem chasar chasir mitachas kisa kavod. He made a special opening, special entrance for Menashe to do tshuva, but he still didn't want to. That's what happens. It doesn't mean you don't have an opportunity, but when you're so far gone, you don't seize the opportunity. Mm-hmm. That's the problem.
You don't see the opportunity.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that was the problem with Menashe.
You don't want to see it.
Yeah.
There's a difference of don't seeing it, but he don't want to see it.
No, right. He sees things that he doesn't understand. It's like there was a flood.
Mm-hmm.
There was a rabbi there, and he's davening and davening, and canoe comes by. He says, "Rabbi, come on, come on." He says, no, I'm davening.
Hashem will save me.
It goes higher and higher, sends a helicopter. Finally, he dies. He gets upstairs, and I'm a pious man, and davening all the time, and doing all the kinds of stuff. Why did I drown? He says, I sent you a canoe, I sent you a...
Yeah.
Finally, right. I sent you the helicopter, and you don't take advantage of these
right.
things. You just don't see.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to do.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. So let's see what happens over here. So Elisha gives Gehazi an opportunity, and he says no. He says, no, I'm not interested. So, because of that, he ended up dying in his chait. It says, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that right? All the Jewish people have a portion in the world to come, except for three kings and four hadyotos, regular men. One of those four men, is Gehazi. Gehazi does not have a portion in the world to come. That's what the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. So let's take a pasuk test. V'yelech chazel likrasai. So Chazal goes to greet Elisha. He comes over with this huge entourage of 40 camels, right? These are all gifts to Elisha. He delivers the message of the king, and he says, the king, Ben-Hadad, sent me, and he asked me to ask you if he's going to live from this illness, or he's going to die. Elisha turns to him, and he says, Lech amaloi chayoi tichye, v'irani Hashem ki mois tamus. Gives him a very funny answer. He tells him, tell your master that he's going to live, but Hashem showed me that really he's going to die. What's he telling him? He knew that he was really supposed to live. Right? Ben-Hadad, the king, was supposed to live. But Elisha is telling Chazal, you, Chazal, are going to be the one to kill him. You could kill him. And you can take over. That's what he's telling him. Really, he's going to live. If you leave him be, he's going to live from this illness. But you're going to end up killing him, and you're going to become king. V'yamed espanov v'yosem adboish v'yevk isha elikim. So meanwhile, as Elisha is saying this, he stands there for a long moment, tries to hold back his tears. Right, he turns away, he puts his hand in his puts his face in his hands, tries to hold back his tears, but he can't eventually, and he starts crying, he starts bawling. So Chazal sees this, and he says, V'yamar Chazal, madua adoni boiche? Chazal turns to Elisha and he says, why are you crying? What's wrong? V'yoymer, ki adati yasasher tas leiv bnei Yisrael, he's telling him, I know, I see in the prophecy what's going to happen in the future. You're going to become king after Ben-Hadad, and you're going to carry out Hashem's decree over the Jewish people. You're going to go ahead and you're going to destroy their cities. You're going to and burn them. You're going to kill their young men with a sword. You're going to mutilize their children and cut open their pregnant women. Terrible, terrible prophecy. Right? With terrible cruelty. Right? It's literally Nazi type of activity that Elisha is describing over here. V'er b'chazel kima adcha kelev kiyase adavar gadol seh. So, Chazel is a little bit taken aback. And he says, really, you really think that I'm going to be the one to do this? Elisha says, yes, you are going to be the one. It's going to be you. That's the nevuah that I got. And sure enough, what happens? Ve'elech mes Elisha. Chazal leaves Elisha. Ve'yabel adoyna ve'yamer lai. Ma omer lecha Elisha. Ve'yamer omer li chayoy tichye. So the he comes to go over to this man and he tells him Chazal comes over to the king and the king asks him what news, what was the message, what did Elisha say? And Chazal says, Elisha said you're going to live from this sickness, which was correct. Mm-hmm. It was true. From the sickness alone he was going to live.
But
he didn't know the other part of the prophecy of Elisha, that Chazal himself is going to kill the king.
Somebody's
going
to get you.
Right. So Chazal himself.
I have a question. A little bit.
Yeah.
How come sometimes his name is spelled with a hey and sometimes not?
Chazal?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. I didn't see anyone speak about
I
that.
I have a note down here also. Throughout this chapter, the name Yoram is sometimes written Yehoram.
Mm-hmm.
There must be something going on with both names.
Right. Right. It's a good question. Yeah. So what happens? Pasuk Tesvav, Vehini Macharas, Veikach Machber, Veitbol B'Maim, Veifreis Alpanav Vayomais, Veim Lech Chazal Tachtav. The next morning, he takes a cloth, he dips it in water, and he puts it on his face, and he tells him, Chazal tells the king, that I'm doing this because I want to cure you. Little did the king know that what he's really doing is he's trying to kill him. But he's trying to kill him in a way he's not going to know that he's killing him. So he put the cold water over his face, and that caused the king to get some kind of cold, and that led him to die, eventually. Okay, we'll stop here, and we'll continue from here next week. Be'ezer Hashem.